Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Thursday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 15 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on May 14th of 2017 under the headline Mount Hood. So mild-mannered you forget it's an active volcano. It's a rewriting and thorough re-researching of a shorter column that was first published way back in September of 2009. Here we go. Claiming Mount Hood is a big achievement. It's no Everest, but at 11,244 feet, Oregon's highest is not an insignificant mountain either. But modern climbers making the final assault on the summit have one major psychological advantage over their fellow climbers of a century ago. They know, with nearly 100% certainty, that the thing isn't going to explode while they're standing on top of it. Mount Hood, or Y East as the Native Americans call it, is an active volcano, something that many Oregonians actually don't know. But the last time it expressed itself as such, a minor episode in 1907 involving steam and smoke but no fire or lava, was well outside the bounds of living memory. As far as anyone alive today knows, the mountain has always been just as it now stands, tall, serene, covered with glaciers and snow. Such was not its reputation on March 19, 1894, when the officers of the old Oregon Alpine Club held an organizing meeting to plan a new climbing club. The club, to be called the Mazamas, after a Spanish word for a mountain goat, would be open only to people who had summited Mount Hood. And later that year, on a blustery July day, on which numerous would-be members backed out due to weather conditions, 105 intrepid climbers reached the summit, assembled there, held the first meeting of the Mazama Club, and were inducted as charter members. That was around 3 p.m. After that, as the weather started to look more threatening, they hastily canceled a planned banquet at the summit, adjourned, hustled back downhill to safer altitudes, and the third oldest mountaineering club in the country had been formed. They were now part of its history. Today, the Mazama Club remains active, with offices in Portland and a full schedule of outdoor skiing and climbing and trekking trips that thousands of people participate in every year. But although the membership requirement hasn't changed, the meaning of that requirement has. Today, being a Mazama means that one is an accomplished mountain climber. But in 1907, Mazama Club members looking east from Portland at the smoking, grumbling mountain knew their climbs had been more than just a technical triumph. They'd been a successful braving of the Earth's fire spirit. They'd climbed not just any mountain, but a temporarily quiescent volcano, one that could have erupted under their feet at any moment. The last major eruption of Mount Hood happened before Lewis and Clark came to the West Coast, but not by much. Around the time the U.S. Constitution was being ratified, the mountain cut loose, sending smoke and fire into the sky and dropping a 6-inch layer of ash all around the mountain and its flanks, unleashing a torrent of pyroclastic material mixed with rocks and dirt and water from melted glaciers that roared down the Sandy River Valley to the Columbia. This actually was the source of the deep, quote-unquote, quicksand after which the Sandy River was named several dozen years later. This episode kicked off a spate of fiery activity on top of Oregon's tallest mountain that lasted a good 75 years. Oregon newspapers reported excitement on the mountain in 1853, 1854, 1859, and 1865. The 1859 eruption is particularly interesting because, of course, that's the year Oregon became a state. It was also a very dramatic incident. According to a pioneer named W.F. Courtney, quoted by author Bill Gulick, quote, "It was about 1:30 in the morning when suddenly the heavens lit up and from the dark there shot up a column of fire. For 2 hours as we watched, the mountain continued to blaze at irregular intervals." So, less than 35 years before the Mazama Club's charter members made their plans to summit Oregon's largest peak, it had been belching fire into the night sky. Today, every winter, thousands of happy Oregonians slide down the sides of Mount Hood on skis and inner tubes. They do that in the summer, too. Timberline offers the only year-round alpine skiing in North America. Every summer, thousands more set out to climb it. Mount Hood is the second most climbed mountain in the world, after Japan's Mount Fuji. New Hampshire's Mount Monadnock gets more climbers, but it's only 3,165 feet high. That's just 700 feet higher than Mount Constitution on Washington's Orcas Island, which gets many times more climbers than both Hood and Monadnock combined, many of whom pedal all the way to the top on bicycles. It all kind of depends on one's definition of mountain. Mount Hood is not the most technically difficult by a long shot, but it can be treacherous. Over the years, roughly 140 climbers have been killed on it. And yes, one of those actually was killed by volcanic activity, although not the kind one usually thinks of. In 1934, a fumarole, a crack in the ground venting hot volcanic gases, melted holes and caves in one of the glaciers on the mountain. A climber coming across these caves decided to explore them and was overcome by fumes and suffocated inside. This climber remains the only person in state history to have been killed by a volcano in Oregon. In the past several dozen years, there have been a number of small earthquake swarms at the mountain, reminding everyone that it's still alive and smoldering. Although any volcanic activity on Mount Hood will most likely be quite mild compared with the Mount St. Helens eruption, it is one of the more likely candidates for America's next volcanic breakout, which is an interesting thing to contemplate while riding inner tubes with the kids at Snow Bunny. Key sources in this story included works by Bill Gulick, John Bell, Jack Grauer, and OregonEncyclopedia.org. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. If you haven't yet, check out my Offbeat Oregon books. As of the time of this recording, I've published Heroes and Rascals of Old Oregon, Love, Sex, and Murder in Old Oregon, and Bad Ideas and Horrible People of Old Oregon. Sometime in the summer of 2025, a fourth title should be coming out, if it hasn't already. You know, I record these ahead of time. It will be titled Nuts, Cranks, and Characters of Old Oregon, and they are available in hardcover, softcover, and ebook, everywhere books are sold. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now!